How many of you guys have a hard time listening to people tell you what to do? We've got a lot in here. I don't know if that's a good thing or not. I also struggle with this, and especially struggled with that when I was younger. As a teenager in high school, when you're in school, you're pretty much told, go to school, right? That's pretty much the basic thing you're told to do, and that was hard for me. I had a hard time doing that, especially in the spring and the fall, when in the spring the water started getting a little bit warmer in the lakes and rivers, and in the fall when it was starting to get a little cooler, I would much rather go swimming somewhere than I would sit in school. And I just remember thinking, you know, nothing's going to come of this, whatever, like, I'm just having fun with my friends. Nothing is going to come back at me. And of course, it did, because it always does when you kind of say that. Famous last words, right? I'm invincible. And then all of a sudden, something happens. So, you know, skipping school, and all of a sudden, my parents get this letter in the mail that says, your son has missed such and such amount of days in school. And that was like, oh no, what have I done? And that was the end of that, obviously. After that, I was in school all the time. And I had a little bit of a grounding to go through as well. But I want to read a story with you guys, and it's like super familiar. You probably have all heard it, especially as kids. But I want to read a story with you about another person, a man, who didn't like being told what to do, or at least didn't like being told what to do in this one instance. So I want you guys to open up to the book of Jonah. This super familiar story, you know, Jonah got eaten by a big whale or a fish, however you heard it as a kid. But I think that there's so much that we can learn from this story. So because this is a really, really short book, we're just going to work through the whole thing. There's only four chapters, and they're really, really short, so we'll read the whole thing. Bear with us. So it starts like this. It says in chapter 1, also, Jonah is hard to find in the Bible sometimes. It's in between Obadiah, the book of Obadiah, and the book of Micah. It's really short, so you might miss it. So anyway, I'll start out in chapter 1. It says, the word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai, go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it, because its wickedness has come up before me. But Jonah ran away from the Lord and headed for Tarshish. It wasn't very long before he decided he wasn't going to do what God told him to do. He went down to Joppa, where he found a ship bound for that port. After paying the fare, he went aboard and sailed for Tarshish to flee from the Lord. Then the Lord sent a great wind on the sea, and such a violent storm arose that the ship threatened to break up. All the sailors were afraid, and each cried out to his own God, and they threw the cargo into the sea to lighten the ship. But Jonah had gone below deck, where he lay down and fell into a deep sleep. I find it very interesting how Jonah was told by God. So it doesn't necessarily come out and say that Jonah was a prophet, but in other places in the Bible, it talks about Jonah, the prophet, son of Amittai. So he was a man of God. He was a prophet, somebody who heard from God, and God told him what to do. And in this instance, he decides, no, I don't want to do that. It's not explained at the beginning. All of it says is God says, go and do this, and Jonah runs the other way. And I find it so interesting because when they're in the ocean and the sea's getting rougher and rougher, the sailors, they start crying out to their gods. But Jonah, he decides to go down to the bottom of the ship, which is kind of like, if you're in the storm, in a massive storm, you don't go to the bottom of the boat because that's where the water starts coming in first. You know, if you're in the bottom of the boat, has anybody seen the Titanic? If you're in the bottom of the boat, you're dead. Those guys down in the boiler room in the Titanic, they were the first ones to die. They were toasted. So why was Jonah running down into the bottom of the boat? And then, of course, he falls into a deep sleep. Like, what is this guy's problem? There's a huge storm. Who can sleep in the middle of a giant storm going on? So then it says in verse 6, it says, the captain went to him and said, how can you sleep? That's what we're all thinking right now. Get up and call on your God. Maybe he will take notice of us so that we will not perish. The captain's realized all of our gods aren't doing anything. Hey, what about this guy? Hey, call on your God. We'll do anything so that we don't perish. It says, then the sailors said to each other, come, let us cast lots to find out who is responsible for this calamity. They cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. So they asked him, tell us, who is responsible for making all this trouble for us? What kind of work do you do? Where do you come from? What is your country? From what people are you? Speaking of a storm. And God said, exactly. We'll just keep going until the power cuts us off. So they find out, hey, Jonah is the one. Jonah is responsible for this. They do this thing called casting lots, and it was a pretty common thing to do back then. It was almost like drawing straws. Whoever picks the longest straw is it kind of thing. They did that, and Jonah picked the longest straw, and they realized this guy is responsible. And then they start asking him all these questions. You know, what's your problem, basically? Where are you from? What did you do? What's your job? And then Jonah says, I'm a Hebrew and I worship the Lord, the God of heaven who made the sea and the dry land. That would probably terrify those sailors. The God who made the sea. Of course it's you. That's why this storm is happening. This terrified them and they asked, what have you done? They knew he was running away from the Lord because he had already told them. The sea was getting rougher and rougher, so they asked him, what should we do to you to make the sea calm down for us? Pick me up and throw me into the sea, he replied, and it'll become calm. I know that it is my fault that this great storm has come upon you. Instead, the men did their best to row back to land, but they could not, for the sea grew even wilder than before. Then they cried out to the Lord, please, Lord, do not let us die for taking this man's life. Do not hold us accountable for killing an innocent man, for you, Lord, have done as you pleased. Then they took Jonah and threw him overboard, and the raging sea grew calm. At this, the men greatly feared the Lord, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows to him. I also find this kind of funny because if you notice, in that section of Scripture that we read, Jonah didn't ever pray to God. He explained who he was. He hid in the bottom of the boat. But he didn't ever pray to God. He didn't ever say, God, please stop. Sorry, I made a mistake. I won't run away from you anymore. He suggested throwing himself overboard. That seems a little extreme. You think that if you were an Israelite who knew God and knew his commands and his laws, the first thing would be, God, sorry. Sorry, I will now go to Tarshish. He suggests killing himself over that. He says, no, throw me into the sea. It'll get calm then. Well, what did he think was going to happen after that? He was just going to float around in the ocean for a long time? But these sailors who don't even know God, they have other gods. Who knows, maybe they worship, you know, several gods all at once. They pray to God. Jonah says, hey, throw me overboard. And they say, I don't know if that's a good idea. And then they try to row some more. They try to get away from the storm a little bit more. And then finally they're like, okay, God, please, if we're going to throw this man overboard and he's going to die, don't hold us accountable because really this is your fault. You brought this storm on us. So these sailors who don't even know God are praying to him before this man of God prays to God. And if you think about it too, these sailors care more about Jonah's life than he cares about his life or their life. He knew that he was responsible for the storm, and as soon as the storm was happening, he decided to go into the bottom of the boat. He didn't think first, oh, well, you know, here's the storm. I'll just jump overboard because I know that'll stop the storm. He went into the bottom of the boat. He was trying to just continue to run away. And then it says this in the last verse. It says, now the Lord provided a huge fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. That's pretty significant considering the story of Jesus, 3 days and three nights, right? On the third day, he rose. From inside the fish, Jonah prayed to the Lord his God. He said, in my distress, I called to the Lord, and he answered me. And I'm thinking, when did you do that? From deep in the realm of the dead, I called for help, and you listened to my cry. You hurled me into the depths, into the very heart of the seas, and the current swirled about me. All your waves and breakers swept over me. I said, I have been banished from your sight. Yet I will look again toward your holy temple. The engulfing waters threatened me. The deep surrounded me. Seaweed was wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountain I sank down. The earth beneath barred me in forever. But you, my Lord my God, brought my life up from the pit. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. Those who cling to worthless idols turn away from God's love for them. But I, with shouts of grateful praise, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. I will say, salvation comes from the Lord. So, it seems interesting. Jonah, from what we hear now, we see that Jonah, one, got word from the Lord. He says, hey, go to Nineveh and preach to them that basically they're going to be destroyed because their wickedness is really bad. And Jonah says, nope, and he goes the other way. And then he gets in this boat and he's sailing, and Tarshish is, they don't really know exactly where it is, but Israel is kind of on this side of the Mediterranean Sea. The Mediterranean Sea kind of wraps in like this. And then Israel's like right here. And then they say Tarshish was like something like way over here in Spain, like on the tip of the Mediterranean. So he was literally trying to go as far away as he could. He was trying to sail as far away as he could. So he's running away, and then all of a sudden the storm happens. And he, I'm sure in his mind, he's thinking, oh great, I hope this isn't God punishing me. And he decides to go down. I'm going to take a snooze, and maybe the storm will blow over by the time I wake up. And I'm sure he was rudely awakened by the captain saying, why are you sleeping? There is a massive storm going on outside. What have you done? We think it's you, basically, is what he was saying. And Jonah's been running and running and running away from God, and then he finally realizes, okay, throw me into the sea, and then the storm will stop. Gets thrown in the sea, a fish swallows him, a giant fish. And then he finally realizes, okay, I need to smarten up. Took him a lot. He literally, if you follow, studying this book, it talked about how the language was, he went down to Joppa, which was the port city that he'd get on the ship. And then he went from Joppa down to Tarshish. And then he went down to the bottom of the boat. And then he went down into the sea and down into the bottom of the whale or the fish. We assume it's a whale because how many fish out there could swallow a whole human being? But he's on this journey spiraling down. He's just going down, down, down until, well, I think being in the belly of a fish is the lowest that you could probably ever go. It's not rock bottom. I don't know what you would call that bottom, but it basically is rock bottom. How much further can you go? He's slowly being digested in this belly of a fish. And he finally realizes, God, okay, I'm sorry. Forgive me. And then he this long psalm, we don't know whether he wrote it or whether it was a common psalm or prayer that they prayed in that time. But he goes through this and says, you know, when I was at my lowest point, you saved me. And talking about how God is his salvation. And we look at this and we say, ha, finally, Jonah has smartened up. He's changed his mind. He's now going to follow God. So let's continue to read. It says in verse 10, after this long prayer, it says, and the Lord commanded the fish, and it vomited, which is an awesome word, Jonah onto dry land. Talk about being humbled. He was literally puked out of the stomach of a fish. Onto dry land. And then it says in chapter 3, it says, then the word of the Lord came to Jonah a second time. So basically, this is like a whole new chapter. Well, it literally is a whole new chapter, but it's a whole new section of Jonah's life. A second time, God said, go to the great city of Nineveh and proclaim to it the message I give you. Jonah obeyed the word of the Lord and went to Nineveh. Now, Nineveh was a very large city. It took 3 days to go through it. Jonah began by going a day's journey into the city, proclaiming, 40 more days and Nineveh will be overthrown. The Ninevites believed God. A fast was proclaimed, and all of them, from the greatest to the least, put on sackcloth. When Jonah's warning reached the king of Nineveh, he rose from his throne, took off his royal robes, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat down in the dust. This is the proclamation he issued in Nineveh. By the decree of the king and his nobles, do not let people or animals, herds or flocks, taste anything. Do not let them eat or drink, but let people and animals be covered with sackcloth. Let everyone call urgently on God. Let them give up their evil ways and their violence. Who knows, God may yet relent and with compassion turn from his fierce anger so that we will not perish. When God saw what they did and how they turned from their evil ways, he relented and did not bring on them the destruction he had threatened. Now, as I was studying this book, some of the people I was reading were saying that the response of the king was almost made to be a comical thing. So he made this decree, which is totally reasonable. He said, don't let any people or animals eat or drink anything. So basically, they're fasting. They were basically saying, we're not going to eat, we're not going to drink until God realizes that we have repented. So it's this extreme action. But this is where a lot of these people were saying, it's almost comical. It says, but let the people and animals be covered with sackcloth. Now, sackcloth was basically like a human diaper. It was kind of like the king basically, when it first said the king got rid of his kingly robes and put sackcloth on, basically he strips down to nothing except for like a cloth thing around his private area. So can you imagine animals having these? They're literally putting these diaper type of things on animals. So it says, but let people and animals. So our imaginations are just running now. So like, do these little chickens have diapers on? Do the cows have diapers on? Do the goats? Do the sheep? Is all of this stuff, do all of these animals literally have what looks like a diaper, which is sackcloth? And basically what these authors of the books that are studying Jonah say is that it's almost comical that when God spoke to Jonah, he did the exact opposite. But when God spoke to the Ninevites, they literally went to the furthest extreme that they could to say, we're sorry. It took Jonah getting swallowed by a fish, and all it took for Nineveh was for Jonah to walk only one day into the city. It said the city takes 3 days to walk through. Jonah only walked one day, proclaiming, 40 days, Nineveh will be overthrown. And it only took that one day, and then all of a sudden, you've got this kind of comical thing happening where animals and humans alike have basically diapers on, and they're sitting in dust and dirt. Basically, they're fully repenting. And then it says in verse 10, when God saw what they did and how they turned from their evil ways, he relented and did not bring on them the destruction he had threatened. Let's keep going. It says in chapter 4, but to Jonah this seemed very wrong, and he became angry. He prayed to the Lord, isn't this what I said, Lord, when I was still at home? That is what I tried to forestall by fleeing to Tarshish. I knew that you are a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger and abounding in love, a God who relents from sending calamity. Now, Lord, take away my life, for it is better for me to die than to live. I think Jonah's a drama queen. But the Lord replied, is it right for you to be angry? Jonah had gone out and sat down at a place east of the city. There he made himself a shelter, sat in its shade, and waited to see what would happen to the city. I find this interesting because basically Jonah's saying, you know, God, you forgave them, but they're just going to go back to what they were doing before. So I'm going to go sit above the city, make a nice little shelter, and just wait until they start making mistakes again, and then you have to destroy them because I told you so. That's basically what Jonah is saying. I can't wait to be able to say to you, God, I told you so. And we're still waiting for anybody to actually say that to God, but Jonah was trying to do that. Then the Lord God provided a leafy plant and made it grow up over Jonah to give shade for his head to ease his discomfort. And Jonah was very happy about the plant. God is way too gracious. Jonah is literally saying, God, I think you're wrong, and just wait until you're proved wrong. I'm going to say I told you so. And God says, well, okay, that's fine. I'll make this nice little plant grow and give you shade because it's pretty hot out here in the desert. And when it says Jonah was very happy about that plant, in the Hebrew, that very happy is actually translated to like dancing around for joy. So Jonah was literally like dancing because a plant grew to give him shade. And then it says, but at dawn the next day, God provided a worm, which chewed the plant so that it withered. When the sun rose, God provided a scorching east wind, and the sun blazed on Jonah's head so that he grew faint. He wanted to die again and said, it would be better for me to die than to live. But God said to Jonah, is it right for you to be angry about the plant? It is, he said, and I'm so angry I wish I were dead. But the Lord said, you have been concerned about this plant, though you did not tend it or make it grow. It sprang up overnight and died overnight. And should I not have concern for the great city of Nineveh, in which there are more than 120,000 people who cannot tell their right hand from their left, and also many animals? And that is where the book of Jonah stops. Kind of leaves us on a little bit of a cliffhanger. What happens? What happened to Jonah? What happened to the city of Nineveh? Did they continue to be good? Did Jonah just stay there until he actually died in the desert, waiting until Nineveh rebelled again against God? Or did he just give up and go back? What happened? One thing I want to point out, I'm gonna come away with two points I want to talk about from this. But before we get to those 2 points, I just want to talk a little bit about the overall story. We see Jonah practicing what today therapists call escapism, trying to step out of reality when things aren't going your way. First of all, he ran from God. You know, God said, hey, go to Nineveh, tell them this. And he ran from God. And then, as I was saying earlier, he spiraled downward. He went down to Joppa. He went down to the boat. He went down into the bottom of the boat. But one of the things that I noticed and that was kind of talked about as I studied is he fell asleep in the middle of a storm. I don't know if you guys have ever been stuck in something, whether it's stuck in an addiction or stuck maybe in depression or stuck in whatever it might be, but a lot of the time, our first inclination is, I just want to sleep. I just want to sleep. And why do we think that? Why do we do that? Because sleeping is total removal from reality. We just sleep, and then we hope when we wake up, things are going to be better. Or, I don't want to deal with this right now. I'm just going to go to bed. I'm just going to go to sleep. When I get up in the morning, maybe I'll feel a little differently about it. Maybe I'll feel better. This is what Jonah was doing. He was trying to sleep away the reality he was in. He realized, I'm in big trouble. I'm pretty sure that this storm that's happening right now is because of me, but you know what? I can't deal with this right now. I'm going to go to sleep. And he went. He fell asleep. He was practicing this escapism, trying to run away from his issues, hoping that it would just all blow over. And one of the scholars that kind of studied Jonah said is that Jonah wasn't trying to run away from God because he thought he could get away from God's presence. He wasn't trying to get away from God's presence because Jonah would have known that God's presence is everywhere. If you read any of the Psalms, which he would have if he was a prophet of God, you would realize that God is everywhere. He wasn't trying to run away from God's presence. He was trying to get so far away that God would say, oh, well, I guess you're too far away from Nineveh, so I'll try to ask somebody else. I'll find somebody else. He was trying to run away from this thing God was telling him to do. And obviously, all of these feelings of escapism eventually culminated into Jonah just saying, I give up. I don't want to live anymore. Which, when we read this, we kind of think, he seems a little dramatic at this point. Like, he doesn't want to live because God showed Nineveh mercy. He doesn't want to live because this plant died. Like, come on, man, just get like a hooded, like, something. Cover your head with something else. You don't have to die. But Jonah was practicing this escapism, which, you know, one step led to another, to the point where he just didn't want it anymore. And the crazy part about this is that God was showing him mercy the whole way. The whole way. So I want to talk about two things out of this. The first is that God shows mercy to all people. Now, we see that God obviously, very obviously, showed mercy to Nineveh. They were a city that was just so full of wickedness. A lot of people say the reason why Jonah didn't want to go to Nineveh was because Nineveh was a city that actually were against the Israelites. They did terrible, atrocious things to the Israelite people. They came and went to war against them. They killed, you know, their people, right? They took plunder from the city, whatever it is. They were an enemy of Israel. And I heard somebody say once, and this might apply a little bit more to the U.S., but I think it still applies to us, but I heard somebody say, Jonah going to Nineveh would be like one of us going to ISIS or to the Taliban or whatever the terrorist group is these days. It would be just the same because Nineveh was such an enemy against Israel that Jonah was like, no, I'm not going. And all of a sudden now we can kind of relate a little bit with Jonah, because how many of us would be like, oh yeah, sure, I'll go to Syria and I'll go to ISIS headquarters and I'll, you know, say these things to them, whatever you say, God. But God shows mercy to all people. God's intention was, hey, Nineveh, you guys are evil. You're going to be overthrown. But once he saw that the Ninevites repented, once he saw the extreme action they took to say, we've messed up, we've made a mistake, and God, we want your mercy. And I think one of the coolest lines in this whole, to me at least in this whole book, is what the Ninevite king said. He said, who knows? God may yet relent and with compassion turn from his fierce anger so that we will not perish. He didn't even know. He didn't even know. He said, who knows? That is true humility. He realized, this king realized, we've been evil. We've done evil. And it doesn't even matter if God, you know, shows us mercy, because we know we've done wrong and we're going to try anyway. Who knows? God might turn. So God shows mercy to anyone. But also I want to point out that God showed mercy to Jonah over and over and over. So Jonah ran away. Then God sent the storm. And Jonah, you know, got thrown overboard and the sea calmed, and then he got put in the fish swallowed him. And this fish really was Jonah's redemption. He was in this fish for 3 days. It would have been miserable. Sure, it stunk really bad. But in that fish, God showed Jonah mercy. Instead of, you know, Jonah eventually slowly being digested and then whatever, Jonah was vomited out onto the dry land. Jonah finally repented. And then we see, even when Jonah's being kind of a little brat and saying, God, I knew you were going to have mercy on Nineveh. That's why I didn't want to come in the first place. So now I'm going to go up there and just watch until they decide, oh, you know, now we're going to be evil again, and then God has to destroy them anyway. When Jonah was being a brat, God still gave mercy to him. He made this plant grow and gave him shade. And then all of a sudden, this worm came out of nowhere and ate the plant. And then Jonah got mad again. And I just marvel at the patience of God, because if that was me, I would just be like, okay, whatever. I'll just do this a different way. But God kept showing Jonah mercy and kept trying to speak into Jonah's life. Jonah was mad, wanted to die. The plant died. He was mad again. He wanted to die. And God said, Jonah, why don't you understand? It's not about you. It's not about your comfort. It's about people. It's about animals. It's about my creation. I created these people. That doesn't make you any more important than them just because you're an Israelite. Just because you know God, which would translate to us today, that doesn't make us any more important than anybody else. Every single person is my creation. And he goes on to say, this is a great city which has more than 120,000 people, which is kind of interesting. That's close to the population of Thunder Bay. But he says, this great city with all these people, why are you angry? Why are you angry? Why are you angry that I showed the mercy? And then why are you just as angry about me showing mercy as a silly plant dying that gave you comfort? It shaded your head, and now, boo-hoo, you're going to get a sunburn on your head. God shows mercy to all people, and I'm actually more impacted by the amount of patience and mercy God had for Jonah than he did for Nineveh. The Ninevites didn't know better. They didn't know God. And as soon as they found out who God was, they decided, well, we're in the wrong. We need to repent. We need to change our ways. We need to stop being evil. But Jonah, who knew God, just kept running away, kept trying to do his own thing, kept trying to say, I'm right, you're wrong. And I think probably the reason why that impacts me more is because I feel like a lot of the time that's me. A lot of the time that's me, where I'm thinking, I know how to do this. I can do this on my own. I don't need you, God. Or I don't want to do it that way. Ah, that's too hard. God continues to show grace to Jonah. Just as much grace as he shows to the Ninevites. So God shows mercy to all people. And the second point I want to point out to you guys is our attitude matters. Our attitude really matters. The key differences between Jonah and really the Ninevites, which are represented by the king, is that Jonah had to be humbled. The Ninevite king humbled himself. Jonah was all this stuff. He was put through the ringer, really. But it wasn't until he hit the absolute rock bottom in the belly of a fish, just twiddling his thumbs, waiting to be digested, that he realized, God, I've been wrong. He had to be humbled. And God kept showing Jonah mercy, but he didn't even realize it. He barely realized this mercy that God was trying to show him. Sure, he was thankful that the fish spit him up, that he didn't die. He was thankful for that. But then he goes and God shows him this great act of mercy that really, if Jonah was in tune with God, should have made Jonah rejoice. Wow, God, you spared all these people. Your mercy is amazing. But instead, it made him angry because he thought they deserved death. God, do you even know what these people have done to our people? They deserve to die. Why are you giving them a second chance? And I think God was trying to tell Jonah, because I've given you a second chance. Because I continue to give you a second chance. Our attitude matters. The Ninevites and the king were able to receive fully the mercy of God. They humbled themselves and God poured his mercy out on them. And I'm sure they were just rejoicing. I'm sure that they were, it doesn't really say exactly their response after God relented, but I'm sure they were rejoicing. I'm sure that they were so pleased with the mercy that was shown them. But then you've got Jonah who just doesn't get it, who just keeps spiraling further down, further and further down. And we see this little blip of hope in his life where he gets spit out of the whale's belly or the fish's belly, and he had this moment with God where he was praising God in chapter 2. But then it's like back to the old, same old, same old. Jonah was upset again. And I want to contrast kind of that attitude that Jonah had, because he was more concerned with his own comfort. You know, when the plant died, he was so mad to the point of wanting to die, because now he was hot. And I want to kind of contrast that with a verse in the New Testament in 1 Corinthians, verse 8, or chapter 8, verse 9 to 13. This is Paul. He says, "Be careful, however, that the exercise of your rights does not become a stumbling block to the weak. For someone with a weak conscience sees you with all your knowledge eating in an idol's temple, won't that person be emboldened to eat what is sacrificed to idols, so that this weak brother or sister for whom Christ died is destroyed by your knowledge? When you sin against them in this way and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if what I eat causes my brother or sister to fall into sin, I will never eat meat again, so that I will not cause them to fall." Now, I've always been amazed that, and in 1 Corinthians, they're talking specifically about food, because in the Jewish law, there were certain foods that they couldn't eat. And once Jesus came and kind of re-envisioned the law that God gave his people, the Israelites, everything became clean. You could eat whatever you wanted. But there were still Jewish Christians that they still felt, I don't want to eat that. I don't want to eat that because I grew up not eating it, or because I'm just still thinking that it's wrong. And Paul says, hey, if you've got people like that, that they it would be a stumbling block for them to eat whatever it is, meat or whatever, then you need to not do that at least in their presence. And then he goes on to say that he would never eat meat again if it made it so that his brothers or sisters in Christ wouldn't be tempted to fall into sin. He would never eat meat again. How many of you guys could say, I'll never eat meat again? That's pretty extreme. Although now in today's culture with the vegans and vegetarians, for sure, that's easier and easier. But that's an extreme stance. He's basically saying, you know, my comfort isn't as important as I once thought it was. My comfort isn't as important as this person's soul. And one of the lines that has kind of has just stayed in my head for so many years is this one line. It says, so this weak brother or sister, and then this one just sentence, for whom Christ died is destroyed by your knowledge. That one line, for whom Christ died, puts back into perspective that Jesus died for all of us. He died for every single one of us. And our actions sometimes can be negative and be a negative influence in other people's lives. And Jonah, we have this man, Jonah, who's so concerned about his comfort that he is more upset about a plant dying than he is about, firstly, all 120-some thousand Ninevites dying, and then also, if you look back on the story, then the sailors dying. He wasn't concerned about them. He was hiding out in the bottom of the boat. He didn't care about them. He was concerned about his own conscience, his own comfort. So our attitude matters. So out of this story, and I'm going to close here shortly, and Gene's going to play a final song, but out of this story, I want you guys to be encouraged that God shows mercy to all. And I'm overly encouraged every time I read Jonah, because of the mercy God showed Jonah, because I know that sometimes I can be just like Jonah. I can be concerned about myself so much where I'm oblivious to everything else around me. I can be so concerned about whatever's going on in front of me, and I just realize I forget about 120,000 people in Thunder Bay. And I'm encouraged that God didn't give up on Jonah. He didn't give up on Jonah. The only thing that brought, that made it so that God was further and further separated from Jonah was Jonah. He was the one that was separating himself from God. It wasn't God. God was there the whole time. God was there speaking to him. God was there trying to make him understand, trying to speak into this arrogance and pride that Jonah had. God was there the whole time, and God is there the whole time with us, all the time. And when we make mistakes, he's there, and he says, it's okay. It's okay to make mistakes. Just get back up. Follow me again. All we can do is receive God's mercy fully. All we can do is humble ourselves when we realize, when God's kind of convicted our hearts, you're doing something wrong, or change this, or do this. All we can do is say, okay, I will, and humble ourselves, because our attitude matters. And if we're just tooth and nail fighting everything all the time, we're going to just continue to separate ourselves from God. If we are just not letting go of thinking this is the way that I'm going to do it and I don't want to listen to anybody else, we're just going to continue to separate ourselves further and further. We're going to push God away. We're going to go deep into this escapism, trying to escape from God, trying to escape from our circumstances, our issues. So I just want you guys to be encouraged this morning that God shows mercy. No matter what we're going through, no matter what I'm going through, no matter what you might be thinking, whether you're like, oh, I'm just stuck in this sin, I just keep doing it over and over and over, or I just can't, you know, get over my anger for this person, or get over this, or get over that, whatever it is, God's there with us. He's wanting to walk us through that. And it's not going to happen right away. It's not something that, sometimes it might. God can work in any way he desires, but a lot of the time, it's a slow process. A lot of the time, it's just God saying, okay, you've made progress. Let's go further. Let's continue. Let's go deeper. And he just shows us more and more mercy. And the more mercy we accept, because our hearts have been humbled, the more joy we're going to experience. And the more gratitude that we're going to have. And the less that we're just going to feel like, oh, God's just always making me do things. It's going to feel like God is just leading my life and making me into a better person. So Gene is going to come up and lead us in a final song, and I just want to close us in prayer so that we can always be reminded of this mercy God has, and that our hearts would be guarded toward a negative attitude. So, God, we just thank you for your word. We thank you for how you speak through the stories of others, and how you speak through the stories of the past. And Lord, we just pray that you would help us to take the story of Jonah and be encouraged by it, to be challenged but also encouraged, God, to know that you show us mercy every day and that you'll never stop showing us mercy as long as we'll receive it. And God, we just pray that your grace and your mercy would be poured out on all of us today, and that whatever it is we're dealing with, whatever it is we're going through, that you would be just changing our hearts and just changing our beings, God. And Lord, we just pray that you would bless us in the coming weeks, and that you would continue to be an encouragement to us as we go about our week. And I just pray all this in your name.